Good evening. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you so much for coming back. Over the preceding 3 weeks, we had a chance to get three different perspectives. We saw in Perek Aleph, Daniel and his peers, Hanani, Mishael, Azariah, as children, as teenagers, already standing their ground in the world of Kashrus, in the world of Avodah Zarah, and succeeding spiritually and materially. And then we moved to Perek Beis, where we had a chance to watch what happened when Nebuchadnezzar had a terrifying dream, a dream which he was seeking both memories of the dream itself as well as the explanation, and the ultimate explanation given by Daniel after he and his peers had davened for that type of insight. And then last week, in the third parak, yet another type of episode, kind of with now the focus rather than on Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, Azariah, and where they were put to the test of whether or not they would. Nebuchadnezzar was apparently responding to the dream he had had in Perek Beis, the dream of the multi-material statue. He responded with a statue of his own, a statue that was all gold, that was meant to represent his eternal dominion. Nebuchadnezzar is Babylon forever, and ultimately, Hanani, Mishael, Azariah passed the test with flying colors. They're thrown into the furnace, and they survive Derech Nes, and they teach Nebuchadnezzar an important lesson, the lesson that he had not succeeded in learning from the first dream, the dream that he had. He learned from them that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was in charge. And now we come to Perek Daled, or maybe more precisely, the end of Perek Gimel, leading into Perek Daled. The last three psukim, the Christians broke up the prakim, but in terms of the parsha breakdown, the psuchos and stumos, the paragraphs in the Tanakh, the break really includes, as the handouts that you have do, the last three psukim of Perek Gimel leading into Perek Daled. And here, it's going to be new, and a return at the same time to some themes we've already seen, some episode, a return to an episode we've seen, but with a new twist. This Perek Daled as a whole, it's a story within a frame. It's a story of a dream. This is the second dream, the second of the two dreams of Nebuchadnezzar we're going to hear about, the second dream for which he's going to seek interpretation, and ultimately only Daniel can provide that type of interpretation. It's presented within a frame. The dream is presented within the frame of a letter. Perek Gimel, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Nebuchadnezzar Malka, Nebuchadnezzar, the emperor, sends a letter. All of a sudden, without even any warning, you begin to hear the text of a letter. Shalom Aleichem. Shalom Aleichem from Emperor Nebuchadnezzar to all of the nationalities, all of the languages, all of the groups within my dominion, within my empire. And he says, I need to tell you about the Nisim v'Neflos that I witnessed. And the Nisim v'Neflos that taught me about the power of the Supreme King of the universe. Nisim v'Neflos that taught Nebuchadnezzar about the power of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And then the content, so that's sort of the frame. And that's how, if you turn to the end of Perek Daled, he signs off. The last few psukim in Perek Daled. The last pasuk closes after he tells the story, the contents of his letter. Ke'ana non Nebuchadnezzar. As a result, right now, I Nebuchadnezzar mishabach meromeim hadar lemel shemayim. I am mishabach meromeim takadosh baruch hu, King of the universe. Ma'abedoi kashot. Everything he does is true. What he does is proper. I recognize takadosh baruch hu. It's within that frame. Within this frame, we're presented with the fourth episode in Sefer Daniel, the second dream of Nebuchadnezzar, told by Nebuchadnezzar himself. Nebuchadnezzar, the entire story is told within the context of this. This is a letter, the story that Nebuchadnezzar told his empire, and the lesson that he drew from it. And over the course of the letter, he tells of the second dream, and the dream is very different and similar at the same time to the first dream. There are differences in terms of content, and there are differences in terms of message. The differences in terms of the way the way Daniel responds and the steps of Daniel's response. At the same time, we're going to see that there are certainly certain overall similarities. He tells a story. Let's first sketch it, and then we'll work our way through some of the psukim. He tells of a dream that he had. The dream does not involve a statue, as it did last time. The dream involves a tree. And he sees this glorious tree. A tree which, an enormous tree, and a tree which has an entire ecosystem, encompasses an entire ecosystem within it. And he talks about the birds and the animals, they have a lot going on, are all surrounding this tree. And the trees provide nutrition for everyone around it. Everyone's feeding off of the tree. And then, in the dream, he sees and hears a malach who says, we're going to cut the tree down. We're going to chop it down to the ground. But we're going to leave a stump. We'll leave the roots. We'll leave the roots, and we're going to chain the roots. We're going to chain the roots to the ground, and the roots will be busy eating the grass. The roots will be busy being rained upon, getting wet from the rain. The roots will be stuck outside. And talks about what's going to happen, a change of heart, and that's the dream. And Nebuchadnezzar tells Daniel the dream, and we're going to watch Daniel's response. So let's take a look inside. In Pasuk, the very first Pasuk of Perek Dalet, Anar Nebuchadnezzar Shalei Haves Bevesi. He's telling his empire the story. I was very calm. I was very happy. Ranan Behechali. Everything was great. And then suddenly I was frightened. Malbim points out that perhaps part of the reason why he's opening by telling everyone how calm he was, he's not trying to save face in this letter. That's one thing that's clear. It's remarkable that he's not trying to save face. And he's very clearly not trying to save face because this is an incredibly embarrassing story. The more we read, the more embarrassing it becomes to Nebuchadnezzar. He's being incredibly honest. This is, by the way, the last Nebuchadnezzar parak. Next paragraph, we're moving on to Nebuchadnezzar's descendants. So Nebuchadnezzar is, in a certain sense, in terms of his moral development, is peaking. He is finally getting the message. And he's being very authentic and very honest. So this is not about saving face. But perhaps, the Malbim suggests, the reason why Nebuchadnezzar opens by telling everyone how calm he was until the moment the dream struck is to explain that what's about to happen to him in the aftermath of the dream, as the dream is realized, it wasn't that he was in a bad place and that he fell into some sort of depression as a result of what was going on. Everything was hunky-dory. And then suddenly, as the Kadosh Baruch Hu sends a message in the dream, and that's exactly what happened and why. So with that in mind, we begin to hear about the dream. He has this dream. Chesve reishi yivahaluni. I was very scared of the dream. And he puts out a message once again. L'chol chakimei Bavel and Pasuk Gimel. All the chacham of Bavel, they should all come and seek to explain it. And in Pasuk Dalet, they all show up. Some familiar names of groups. The Chartumaya. We know that name from, you know that term from Sefer Shemos. Right? The Chartumim. Ashafaya, Kazdae, Gezariah, those are terms that might sound familiar from Perek Beis. Those are the people who had come last time, who were commanded last time, come and tell me what I dreamt and what it means, and you may recall that there was an epic failure. And they were going to be executed by the king's executioner, were not for the fact that Daniel runs in, gets a stay of execution, and manages after davening to tell and interpret the dream successfully. It's intriguing. The Nebuchadnezzar once again reaches out to this whole group, and as he tells them the Pasuk Dalet, he asks them all, and the Chelma Amarana Kadamein. I told them the dream. Remember last time he said, I don't even know what the dream is. Tell me the dream and explain what it means. And that they said, that's impossible. We don't have that type of telepathy. And you don't even remember it yourself. Here he says he gave them an easier job. Called in the same group of people, gives them an easier job. I told them the dream. But they still could not tell me the pitaron. They still couldn't tell me what it means. And so then once again, Ve'ad acharin al kademoi Daniel. Finally, Daniel comes in, Dishmei Belshazzar, whom I call Belshazzar. That takes us back to the very first parak, where when these four boys of Eretz Yehuda, Daniel, Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah, were taken to the palace, one of the first things that happened is they were given Babylonian names. And Daniel's name was Belshazzar. And here we hear, which we had mentioned at the time, but it's right over here in Parak Dal Pasukei, Kishum Elohi. Belshazzar was the Babylonian name given to Daniel was a name of a Babylonian Avodah Zarah. He was named for Nebuchadnezzar's favorite deity. And he turns to Daniel and now we're going to begin to hear what the dream was. We're going to hear in a moment, we're going to get to hear Nebuchadnezzar tell Daniel what the dream is, and we'll see Daniel's multi-pronged response. But before we even get to that, one thing that might surprise what might surprise us about the way Nebuchadnezzar is attacking it, I think Stryker is strange. But the way Nebuchadnezzar is going about it, he has a dream. What would you expect Nebuchadnezzar to do?
Told Daniel.
Told Daniel. Right? Last time, no one else had anything to say, and Daniel solved it. And he ultimately calls Daniel. So why is he? And the definition of insanity. Why is he going to back to the group that failed him the first time? Failed him the first time to the extent that they almost lost their lives over it. It's strange. So it might be, the simplest explanation might be, he got an explanation, Daniel did give him an interpretation, he didn't particularly appreciate it. Daniel last time told him, well, that first dream meant that you'll be emperor for now, but then, Babylon will come and go and others will take your place. He didn't like it. As a matter of fact, he so didn't like it that he spent all of Paragimel trying to fight against it with a statue. So maybe he thought that, let me try, maybe someone else will have something better to tell me. You can't escape the truth. And ultimately he comes to Daniel, and Daniel has something even more unpleasant for him to hear this time. So perhaps he's just trying to avoid, yeah?
But here he knows the dream.
Here he knew the dream. Interesting. Maybe he thought he needed, that's interesting. Maybe he thought he only Daniel could tell him what the dream was. But here, that's interesting. Here, this is easy. And they couldn't even do that. Yeah, that's definitely a possibility. And maybe he thought he only needed Daniel for the supernatural part of it. But he assumed that Chartumim can do their job in the normal sense. The Malbim suggests a third approach. He says, and I think it speaks to a larger theme, which Jeff's Ha'ara, I think, speaks to that larger theme as well. The Malbim suggests that he thought that, that last dream, that was a national, an imperial dream. That was a communal dream. That was about nations. It wasn't about me. So if it's some national, big picture item, so then you got to go to the CEO. Then you need HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Daniel has a direct line to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Nebuchadnezzar thought, this dream, as we'll see, it's personal. It's about the tree. It's about me. It's a personal dream. I don't need... Daniel has a direct line to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Nebuchadnezzar understood that his Chartumim, his magicians, they had a direct line to the sub-deities. To, not the C-level, the middle manager, so to speak. Because that was the polytheistic Avodah Zarah approach that Nebuchadnezzar sort of moved towards, and we already seen that in his language earlier, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge of everything, but then there are other deities sort of below him, his vice presidents. That's the way Nebuchadnezzar was thinking about it, which is a step in the right direction, but obviously still Avodah Zarah. As a matter of fact, with the Rambam, beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Trace sketches the history of Avodah Zarah, that's how he sees it developing. There had been a recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but over time there was sort of this sense that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was in charge, but then he has his vice presidents, and why don't we just pray to the vice presidents, pray to the star, pray to the demigod, and so on and so forth. So Nebuchadnezzar thought that this is a personal issue, I don't need, I just go to the Chartumim. Of course that failed, because the approach that Nebuchadnezzar was taking is absolutely false. It's not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was in charge, but he shares his power with other gods. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was in charge. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. He is the one and only. He's the one and only. That's what earlier on, the end of Perek Beis. Daniel had told the king, Perek Bay, when he began to respond in Perek Bay to the first dream, Pasuk Chav Zayin, Pasuk Chav Ches, he had said, it's not really me. I don't have any power of interpretation. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu might tell me. So he figured, you're not an interpreter. You're God. You're a messenger of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I don't need the big guns. But that is ultimately the message that, as we're going to see soon, he will say that the dream itself will tell him that's the message. That Kadosh Baruch Hu is the one and only power. So ironically, he was grappling with it in the way he dealt with the dream, well, because that's why he needed that message, because that was exactly what he had not yet learned. He understood that Kadosh Baruch Hu is there, he understood that Kadosh Baruch Hu is supreme, but he didn't realize that Kadosh Baruch Hu is the sole power. He was still thinking about a pagan pantheon. So what is the dream? So here he begins to tell Daniel his dream. Here's what I was thinking about. Alu Ilan Begoara Pasig Zain. There's this enormous tree, Rume Sage, incredibly tall. Rava Ilna Vesakif, and it's growing, it's becoming more powerful. And Pasig Ches, incredible, it reaches the sky. Chazuse Lasov Kol Ara. You can see it from the other end of the world. Sort of like when they tell you that you can see the, supposedly, you can see the Great Wall of China from space. I don't know if it's true or not, but that sort of imagery. This is such a tremendous tree. You can see it from from an incredible distance away, and it's not just large; it's beautiful. The pasuk text, "Af yeshapir im beis agim." It's so verdant and so many leaves, and provides not just pretty, but it provides practical benefit also. Mazin lecholabe, everyone is sustained by this tree. There's shade underneath where the chevas bira live, a phrase that's familiar to us from Kari Bon. By the way, another phrase that's familiar to us from Kari Bon, it comes from the very end of Pasuk Paragimel, Shafar Kadamai Lahachavaya. There's a lot of Kari Bon going on here. It says that the animals enjoy, the wild animals enjoy the shade, Banfoyu during Sipari Shemaya, the birds live in the branches, and so Umine Yitzin, Akir is a key line, we'll come back to it, Pasuk Tes, Umine Yitzin Kol Bistra, all flesh, is living off of this tree. And then he hears, as we said before, he hears a frightening voice in Pasuk Yudalef. The Malach calls with a very powerful voice, go do Ilna, the katsusu anfoi, cut down, chop down the tree, cut off its branches, knock everything down, all the leaves will come down, everything is coming down, the animals will all leave it, the birds will fly away, but Biram, in Pasuk Yudbeis, we'll leave the roots in the soil, and we're going to lock them with chains. Strange thing to do. Iron and copper chains. It'll be locked to the ground. It'll be stuck with the grass. It'll go wet from the sky. And here comes a truly remarkable pasuk. Livivei min enosha yishanun. Its heart will no longer be human. V'levav cheva yishavle. It'll get an animal heart instead. V'shiva idnin yirayach afnon loy. And seven periods of time will pass over this. That's the dream, he says. Pasuk Zvav, dina chelma. That's the dream. What on earth does it mean? So the truth is that last pasuk, that pasuk Yud Gimel, that's intriguing because that's a clue to its meaning. Because all of a sudden, in pasuk Yud Gimel, we're sort of stepped away from the mashal. Trees don't have human hearts that get switched out for animal hearts. So at this point, you already switch from Mashal to Nimshal. And it's clear we're talking about a person. The tree stands for a person. A person is going to lose his animal heart, his animal mind. Yaakov Kamenetsky writes in the beginning of Chumash Devarim, one of the Pesukim of Kriya Shema, that he thinks, that he says, he struggles to figure out, how do you say brain in Biblical Hebrew? What's the word for brain? In Mishnaic Hebrew, it's Moach. What's the word for brain in Biblical Hebrew? So he suggests it can be. There's no word for brain in Biblical Hebrew. So he suggests that lev can mean either, in Biblical Hebrew, can mean either heart or mind. Which is a fascinating idea, a lot to say about that. And maybe it's going here as well. It's a lev, either in the sense of the heart or its mind, as we'll see. Whoever is the tree, he will lose his human mind. He'll be replaced by an animal mind. And that'll be the case for seven chunks of time. So in Pasuk Tezvav, Nuchanesser turns to Daniel and says, What does it mean? You're Belshazzar. He's stressing, you're Belshazzar, because he's still, Nebuchadnezzar is still stuck in the idea that there are other deities, and that's why I call you Belshazzar, because you're like another demigod, and you're plugged into the supreme God. And what does it mean? No one else can explain it to me. And Daniel just goes silent. It's a pasuk that actually provides with a phrase, which the Gemara uses on rarely, but occasionally as an expression. Ishtomim kashachada. He was just silent for a long time. Daniel said nothing. He says nothing. And it's interesting, his response, he says nothing at first, and then Nebuchadnezzar presses him. It's okay, you can tell me. And when he finally responds, his language is interesting. He starts talking to Nebuchadnezzar as you in second person, but then in Pasachaf, in the mid, he all of a sudden begins to be extra bakavadik to the king and speaks to him in third person. Something's going on. And thirdly, Daniel skips a lot of the dream. And his when he finally gives the interpretation, he skips a lot. What seems to be going on, none of the Rishonim suggests, that Daniel doesn't want to say anything at first, not because he didn't have the answer, but because he didn't know how to break it to the king. How am I going to tell the king what's about to happen to you? And that's, the king apparently understood that. He says, no, don't worry, tell me. And his immediate response, the end of Pasuk Tazayin, Mari Chalma L'Sanech Fisher L'Arach, may that dream happen to your enemies, not to you. But then he has to explain it. So he says, Chalma Di Chazis, you saw that Ilana, you saw that tree that grew and grew and grew and grew and grew, and it was so beautiful and so verdant and so prolific, and it's supporting everyone, that's you. And everyone lives within it's a whole ecosystem, just within that tree alone with the birds, that's you. You're an emperor. You're running a whole empire. Antu Malki, says in Pasuk Yutes. You're the king. You grew and you grew. You became more powerful. Ravast, caved. Amazing. To the skies. To the end of your empire spans much of the known world. And then, after saying Ant, which is Aramaic for Ata, you, Pasuk Yutes, all of a sudden Pasuk Chav, he switches to the third person. Dichaza Malka, the way we would say, what does the Rebbe think? It said, the chazamat, but that which the king saw about the malach and the voice, all of a sudden he switched into third person, probably to soften the blow. Because the beginning of the dream is very positive. You have a great run. But then what the king saw, what your highness saw, you're going down. And you're going down fast. You heard the malach and the dream say, go do and cut down the tree. Destroy it, but leave the Baram Iker Sharshoi Ba'ar Shavuku, leave the roots in, but those roots will be chained, and the roots will be busy with the grass and rained upon by the rain that falls from the sky. Until seven chunks of time pass, that's you. It's a Dina Pishra. That's what's gonna happen to you. You're gonna be banished from human society, he tells in Pasuk HaBeis. Tardin min Anasha. You're going to be banished from human society. You're going to be living with the animals. You're going to be eating the grass. That pasuk we remember before, he said, even before the dream leaves the realm of mashal entirely, and begins to talk about the heart and the mind, the whole idea, some of my farshim point that, no one chains trees. And trees don't eat grass. And of course trees are in the rain, that's not very surprising. So that transitional pasuk, because there's already sort of hinting about what's going to happen. And that's direct. You'll end up in chains, and then you'll end up out in the grass with, out in the rain with the animals for seven periods of time. Rishonim debate. Ibn Ezra points out, Machlokas between himself and some of the Gaonim, whether these Idanin, these chunks of time, Zmanim, literally, is it 7 months? Is it 7 years? Not clear, but seven segments of time, Adi Tinda, at the end of Pasuk Chav Beis, until you come to know the Shalit Ila Abba Malchus Anasha, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is totally in charge of the world. Ulaman di Yitzbei Yitnina, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu dishes out Malchus to whoever he chooses. By the way, Yitzbei is that it means to want in Aramaic. Tzadi Beis Aleph is actually familiar, perhaps from Aksuba. Utsavi. Say the chassan wanted to add to the kala. That's the same shorish. Ulamandi Yitzbei, and to him who God wants, he will give it. It says, then you heard, and then he ends with a little chatzi nechama. You heard the mishbaki kishar shohe, that the Malach had said, don't destroy the roots. That means that you're not gone either. You're not gone either. When you come to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you'll be back. So Daniel left out a lot of the most painful details, and the switch to the third person. He didn't really want to tell Nebuchadnezzar at all, but he had no choice. He delivers the message, and then he begins. He seems like he's then he's a little bit of improvisation, because after interpreting the dream, he then goes on saying Pasuk Chaf Dalet. Here's what you should do. We've spoken past weeks about the parallels between Daniel and Yosef. So he says, and here's the solution, like Yosef did. And here's the solution. He says, here's the solution. You remember Bava Basra spends some time on the solution. Lahein Malka, he says, Chata'ech b'tzdaka peruk. You can be poda your chata'im with tzedakah. He says, why don't you give tzedakah? And that will take care of aniyim, and that will be archa l'shleivasech. And that will heal your problem. Give tzedakah. It's intriguing that it's intriguing that that he gives an etzah. Some of the mepharshim are very bothered. Why? Nebuchadnezzar is a horrible rasha. Nebuchadnezzar is a man who is responsible for the Churban Beis Hamikdash, responsible for the massacre of probably millions of Jews. Why is Daniel trying to give him a hand? It's curious. So it could be that Daniel understood that Kadosh Baruch Hu was messaging Nebuchadnezzar because he wants him to do the tshuva. So he's trying to help the process, perhaps. Alternatively, some suggest that this was part of his job. His job was to interpret the dream. This, too, is part of the dream. Where was this idea of giving stuck in the dream? A line that we had seen before. The dream had said, had specified not only that the birds live there and the animals live there, but that everyone is supported, yitzin, everyone is nizon from the tree. So Nebuchadnezzar took that to mean that's part of the messaging also, that staka, if you provide mazonos to others, that can help you. And the Nebuchadnezzar does for a while. Kola mata Nebuchadnezzar malka, Pasuk Chafet. Everything happened. The whole dream played itself out. He starts with the tzedakah, and it lasts for 12 months. But then at the end of 12 months, in Pasuk Chavav, he's walking around his palace, and he says, what is this? Pasuk Chav Zayin. Ahala dahim bel bavel rabsa. This is the grand capital of Babylon. This is me. I'm the most powerful emperor in the world. What am I busy giving stucca to these poor people for? Who needs it? I built this. Ana benisa. I built this glorious palace. But kaf chisni lekar hadari. It was all me. It was all me. It was all my power. And the moment he says that, boom. Od milsa befum malka. The words are still coming out of his mouth. And there's a sound from Shemayim and Pasuk Chapches. Nebuchadnezzar Malka Machusa Adas Minach. You just lost it. You just lost your empire. And he begins literally to lose it. Figuratively. He begins to lose his mind. Minanashal Achtardin and Pasik Laman. At that moment, Nebuchadnezzar, the whole dream begins to unfold with Nebuchadnezzar. And he begins over time. His hair grows long like the birds, and his nails grow long like the birds. And he's out there, and he's living outside. He's been kicked out. The Malbim suggests that if you read the Pesukim carefully, you get the impression maybe at first they tried to, his people tried to keep him in the palace and then bring him. They knew he was supposed to be eating grass in the rain. They tried to bring the grass in, and that may correspond to the beginning of the Pasuk Yud Beis where he was told he was going to be chained. He may have been chained in the palace, and that even that didn't work. And ultimately. Ultimately, he ends up outside. He ends up outside for 7 months, for 7 years. A number of Rishon. Apparently, there was an idea. I haven't found anyone who says it. Rashi maybe is alluding to it. I only found Rishon who say and they disagree. That there were apparently those who understood that a nes nigla occurred and his body changed to that of an animal. The Rav Sadia Gaon rejects it explicitly. Barbanel rejects it. Malbim quotes Barbanel rejects it. He says, no. His body, if you read the Pesukim, his body didn't change. I mean, he became overgrown because he was living like a wild man. But his mind, it wasn't a biological change, but it was a psychological change. He lost his mind. He lost his mind, and he was living out in the forest, thinking. He was living with the cognitive level of an animal. And then there's a turnaround. Yeah.
There's a question on sure. Daniel's suggestion of tzedakah. Was that really a suggestion, or was that really getting Nebuchadnezzar to start his own demise? In other words, that really was part of the dream, that he did have to be this tree, this giving tree, so to speak. And Daniel basically said to him, so, you know, you could start by giving, but Daniel already knew that
maybe.
The giving was going to lead to the Kol Chivotam Yadi. It wasn't going to, that was basically starting the process. He was almost encouraging.
So he was catalyzing.
He was bringing the downfall.
That's interesting.
Facilitating
downfall by pushing the Chanetzer to make a Kol Chivotam Yadi statement. Potentially.
It's really following the halach of the dream.
That's the dream I told Daniel to do.
Exactly. Like Daniel's interpretation was, oh, I'm going to use this opportunity to bring the downfall of this terrible individual.
So what you say is fascinating. As you're saying that Daniel was sort of setting Nebuchadnezzar up,
yeah.
For 12 months he was able to hold out and give the tzedakah, and eventually he rebels, and he says, what do you mean, Kol Chivotam Yadi? And once he says that, he's done. Yes. At the same time, I think it could also be that this is part of the solution. Do you want to add to that?
I guess.
Do you want to speak to Elizabeth's point?
Somewhat, yes. In terms of the Yosef dream,
yeah.
Parallel's dream by Yosef. So the first part of the dream is good. The second part is disastrous with the cows and the grains.
Yeah.
And yet Paro is led to believe there's a way out. This is going to turn for the best.
Right.
And perhaps Nebuchadnezzar is, if Nebuchadnezzar somehow or other knows.
There is a way out. That's interesting that you point out sort of like the sine curve of Yosef's dream. And the truth is that it happens here too. Because you may be right that the dream sort of pushes Nebuchadnezzar to the breaking point where he says something that sort of shows his true colors. At the same time, the end of the story here is positive as well. As Daniel had told him, as the dream had said, you're going to be like this until you can turn around. And in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, he stands up and looks to Shemayim and begins to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's the close, that's the climax. I'm like, here's what I recognize. I recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu is fully in control, and I want everyone, apparently the completion of his tshuva was to be public and tell his entire empire to teach him that lesson. Now, so two closing points, on the one hand and the other hand. So, there's a lot of fascinating imagery in terms of the standing that the Malbim talks about. Human beings stand on 2 feet that allows us to look up to the sky in a way that a four-footed animal cannot. And that capture, literally that's what he does. He looks up to the sky, but it also captures the change in mentality from just being focused on the here and now and not noticing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, such a vivid imagery, to shift to being a human or what a human could be. A human has the potential. Our posture reflects the fact that we have the potential to notice HaKadosh Baruch Hu above us. We don't always do that. Nebuchadnezzar really had already been living as an animal because he had been not recognized HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it actually played out until he came to the point where he was able to recognize he could stand on 2 feet the way a human being is supposed to stand on 2 feet. And then I would leave you with the following idea, which is that the role of tzedakah that you had raised. Tzedakah is also the solution, because the Sefer HaChinuch has a very fascinating counterintuitive approach to tzedakah, which I think is borne out by this parak, which is that tzedakah does a lot for the giver. When he talks about Sefer HaChinuch talks about the goals of tzedakah, he highlights the way in which it transforms the givers, not just in terms of our goodness, but in terms of our emunah. Because tzedakah is a powerful way of reinforcing that the money is ultimately Ribono Shel Olam. It's not really ours. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it to us to use for ourselves and to use for others. We're the shomrim. It's a Akash Baruch deposited money with us to invest properly on his behalf. It's not just a happenstance that he told him give tzedakah. Tzedakah tatsi mavis in general, but tzedakah also is a practical way of capturing the core theme of emunah that Nebuchadnezzar needs to learn. Had he, so on the one hand, you're right, he wasn't yet ready and ultimately couldn't handle tzedakah, instead blurted out how he actually felt. But at the same time, tzedakah is the ultimate solution and can craft us into the type of people who understand what Nebuchadnezzar had to go through a painful process to come to. Thank you so much. Mitchum, next week we're going to meet Belshazzar. Yes.